go!
Trudy.
Let me go!
Trudy, listen to us!
I don't want to listen to you! I don't want to listen to anybody! I want my baby!
Trudy, we can't let you go out there. Don't you understand?
Why? The technos have her! I saw them take her, and we have to get her back!
So welcome to Series 4, Episode 51 of Conversational Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 51, the screenplay was done by Joe Boyle. It was directed by Peter Nathan. And the episode synopsis be read out by Sabine.
The Mall Rats prepare to make a last-ditch effort against the Technos as Paradise continues to work its way into their home. Trudy's concern for Brady leads her to drastic action and a surprise encounter with a familiar face.
Okay, so panel, the episode starts with an opening montage showing deserted streets, workers in the power station, and Paradise users. And the simple question here, it's been 50 episodes, we're now on 51. Has the show done enough to build up the stakes to a satisfying finale?
We were talking about this before we started the recording, and I think we all uniformly agreed, no.
Nope.
No, I do not believe that this story has been streamlined to be going in any particular direction. Even season 3, with all its issues, was going in a particular direction. They just didn't know when to end their story. It's like they didn't recognize the story they were telling was over, and let's cut it and then continue it in the next season or whatever. Season 4, though, there is no direction. It's just been a pile of things happening that have very little follow-through consequence. This led to this, led to that. You know, there's just stuff. And so you're getting to the climax, and it could be anything because it hasn't been leading to anything specific. It's not, the chances of it being satisfactory at this point are nil, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if anything, it would be a mid-season cliffhanger for a winter break or something.
Yeah, you're right there.
But not a season's ending.
And it feels like in many ways, as you talked about, Liz, you talked about season 3, this feels the opposite of that, because it feels like they could have wrapped this up maybe 4 episodes earlier in terms of this techno plot line.
14.
And then maybe have some sort of fallout from that, and actually have been able to see some of the fallout from that, or just the character beat. Because it's missing it, I feel. And at the end of the day, what does any of this actually mean? And does anybody really care? I mean, that's the thing. We've been with this, as we have said, for 51 episodes, and it just feels like I don't care.
Same.
Honestly, the start of this episode even feels like the start of season 2 to me.
Mm-hmm.
Something big happens, nobody gives a damn.
I mean, even if you don't have a plot to really carry you through, you have characters, and that's what you need to use. And season 4 could have been more similar to season 1, where it's really just a character study of the people we are following dealing with their current situation. You know, because season 4 doesn't have a lot of plot that matters in the grand scheme of things, but it's all about these characters just dealing with the fact that there's a techno takeover of their city. Season 1 is not plot heavy. It's character motivated, character based, and it's just about getting to know these people and how they're dealing with the end of the world and the circumstances that throws them in. And so, yeah, there's not a lot of plot, but it's because the characters are carrying you through, and that's what you're interested in. You're getting to know them, how they function, how they deal, how they react to what they're dealing with. Season four paid so little attention to the characters having an actual response that makes sense to what's happening to them. And you add that to a plot that's barely existent, isn't going anywhere, and you've got nothing, really. You don't have anything to carry people to the end of it.
Yeah. And the momentum. Where are we going? We're still not getting anywhere. We're one episode before the finale, and it feels like we've got so much ground to cover. There's no way they're going to be able to do it all.
And things get resolved way too quickly now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they have to, don't they? They have to speed run things. Because if they don't, they're not going to get to finish it off in time.
Like, simply said, had they wanted to give it a proper ending, should have moved the whole kidnapping storyline a couple of episodes back.
Yeah. Yeah.
To actually make it have an impact instead of just two small scenes of kid gets taken, Trudy stands at gate.
And it's kind of, it's a shame, which is what we say a lot about this season, because in this episode alone, they bring up all kinds of stuff that I feel could have been plot points that they were dealing with the entire time. I'll revisit that point when we get there, but it's like, okay, so in the scene, you're showing the conclusion of stories you didn't bother to tell that you could have been telling this whole time. And you didn't bother, and suddenly the characters are bringing up things that should have been an issue for them the entirety of the season. It doesn't matter that they're bringing it up now. You know, if you want to have characters who have utter devotion and belief in each other, then you should have built that up to how they get there, why they feel that way, you know, what they're hinging their belief on. But so much of what they do is they pull stuff out of their butt for the episode, often dropping it in the next episode. They don't carry the through line of these emotions that the characters are having or the struggles they're dealing with. It's too episodic to tell an entire series, you know, and the episodes don't come together as a whole.
Yeah. And like you say, we're missing so many character beats here. And as you said, with season one, it was about the characters. And that seems to have been lost here. And it's not just that people are acting out of character. It's just the fact that the plot needs them to act in a certain way. So that's how they act. And there are lots of... We know that these actors are good. And really, they're what have carried us on this journey through season four. And it's such a shame because they're the only thing that works in this. All of these actors are doing a great job. Even the new ones are trying really hard to do something, you know? And it's just, yeah, it's every turn, the writing is just letting everybody down.
Yeah, literally the only thing they can even do to make the finale worthwhile, or, you know, again, is they have to jingle the keys as hard as they can. And I'll give them credit. They jingle these keys hard as they can. This is the penultimate episode. I think they're jingling the keys. But again, it requires them to simply pull the rug out from underneath you. What they're showing you, what their hat trick is, isn't anything they built to. It's just a sudden ta-da. And that's how they're going to try and get you to come back for the next season. Jingle those keys. They didn't earn it, you know, they didn't build to it, but it's a desperate Hail Mary to make you come back.
Yeah.
Because it's really the only option they have left.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you go back to season two, I think that was the last really good, coherent finale that they actually had, where every single cog fitted together. It felt like a proper finale. You had the Chosen coming, defeating them, but that was something that was bubbling away the entire time. And they were blindsided by it, but us, the audience, were not. And it fitted what was going in with the Mallrats, their preoccupation around the Bill of Rights, their preoccupation around power, basically. And how they were overtaken by this thing because they were so busy infighting and trying to create the world that they wanted. They didn't realize that the world had already changed around them. That was a really great finale. And then I think if you look at three, really, that's just spectacle. It's just about a plane and we have these invaders coming in. But actually, in terms of what's going on with the characters, it feels hollow. And then you get to this one and it's hollow again.
Yeah, fair assessment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
There's no journey we've gone on with the characters, you know, that has brought us to this ending place. And there was really no other place for us to end up because of the steps the characters took to get here, you know, mm-hmm. and it's very linear and it makes sense how we got from point A to point B to Z, you know, and, you know, like I said, season three skips over its natural conclusion and just goes on like a run-on sentence. And the run-on sentence is, doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, and they're just speed running extra stuff. And season four is like, how did we get here? Can you really put it together how these things worked literally to get us here? Because it just feels like this could have branched off in any direction.
Mm. You think back to season one, think of how detailed those steps were to get us to Eagle Mountain. Mm-hmm. You had the virus coming back. You had them learn about the antidote. You had them journeying. It all of that leading up step by step to get you to that Eagle Mountain moment where they hear the observatory information. That was so well done. But here, there are no steps. There's literally no steps. It's just suddenly, this is it. Here we go. That's the ending. So you don't feel nothing.
There was so much character stuff in that as well, Lance.
Along the way, like,
yeah. You had so many character beats.
Mm-hmm. And there were so many opportunities to have that here. So many. But it just decided not to. And I think what's even worse for me is that, okay, you can throw all these flashy new things in with the technology, but then you don't have the Morats really reacting to this whole technology. Like, you know what I mean? You could have had small character beats throughout this whole season with them reacting to the technology in different ways. You know what I mean? Like finding government computers that are now online, or, you know what I mean? Like, just small things to build some character information and development, but we get nothing. It's just one moment of what Celine talking about the washing being back on. It's like, okay, that's great. I mean, it's just vapid and nonsense. Like,
yeah,
no growth.
Well, one thing's for sure, of all the three sisters, Jabba's the one who can't be trusted. Nobody really matters to her but her.
What do you have in mind?
Do you have the support of the Mallrats?
Yeah. Plus Seva's militia and now some of the Eco tribe.
Then it might work.
You have a plan?
Yep.
One problem. I'm having trouble convincing some of the others that you're for real. Okay, I trust you, but why should they?
Meanwhile, feeling like she has little support, a distraught Trudy returns to the mall after having headed out to try and locate Brady herself. Despite everyone saying that they simply cannot highlight to Ram the importance of Brady. See a panel, a few different things here. What do you make of the discussions of a plan between Mega and Jay? And of course, Trudy feeling very unheard.
I'll give this one point. Their reasons for not wanting to bring attention to Brady's disappearance at least make more sense here than they did in season two.
Yes.
I will honestly say that. It actually makes way more sense that they do not want Ram to catch wind, that someone he snatched up is important to the Mallrats, especially in this critical moment, compared to season two, where the reasons they kept giving for not doing everything they could to find Brady and then find Brady and Trudy didn't make sense, you know, and was very selfishly motivated, which again, there's consequences of that. That's why we let it slide, because they pay the price for that. But here, at least, I was like, okay, I buy that. I buy that the person you're dealing with, he's responsible for this child being snatched up. If he has any clue how important this child he has in his engagement is, you know, they may lose something and she can be used against Brady, I mean, her mother, you know, and I was like, okay, that's at least a better reason for, they didn't say we're not going to look for her, but at least gave a good reason why they got to keep it on the DL.
But the level of response to Trudy that they give her, it's like, I just want to slap all of them except for Hawk. Like, Hawk's initial response when Trudy says we need to go find her is, yeah, we should. You know, he wants to go out. He wants to go help her find Brady. And yes, she make a good point of why they're not, but The saying, Sif is already out looking, Lex is out looking. Well, Lex ain't looking anywhere because he and Sammy are selling. But it's like, yeah, there's two people looking, so that's enough, right?
But it does make sense as to why they, as Liz has said, why the excuse that they give. I mean, I think the scene between Trudy and Amber is particularly interesting because Trudy's basically saying to Amber, as a mother, you have to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really interestingly played scene, I think.
It was. It just, I just feel so bad for her. I can't help it.
I love the way Amber approached her in that moment. I will say the scenes we get of Trudy dealing with this awful, you know, time loop she's stuck in the apocalypse of her child being snatched from her. There are some highlights in each scene, even when it's infuriating. And I thought this captured something that I did like in season two when Brady first went missing. The chaos the mall was already in because Tyson had blown up that day. Right? So there's a few things that I liked. And Amber, the way she approaches her friend, and I'll give all the credit to Beth and the way she chose to act this scene. She approaches her friend like a wounded and scared animal. There is a deep resonance of empathy and understanding of that this isn't something new, that this Trudy has been through this before, and the trauma this must be unleashing upon her nervous system of being in this situation again. Amber would know firsthand how protective Trudy is of her daughter, how she rarely ever lets her out of her sight, doesn't trust other people to look after her because of the traumatic event of losing her. And so the way she approaches her, I want to give Beth her stars because it's so genuine and beautiful and how quiet her voice is, how gentle she is. She doesn't dismiss her friend's panic in any way. She just needs to get through to her. She's not dismissive in so many ways that Trudy has been dismissed in the middle of a panic and told she's panicking for no reason. You know, I loved Beth's performance. I love how quiet that felt, like an intimate moment between two friends who genuinely love each other, and the best way she could have approached Trudy. And you can tell it hurts Amber to have to tell her friend in this moment, to know that her friend is going through this, and, you know, to have to talk her into, we can't go to the Technos, you know, like, even though I'm sure Amber would feel the same if her son went missing, go right to the Technos. Someone would have to talk her out of it, you know? And I just thought that was beautifully performed.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was very powerful, but stay quiet as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The way she physically reaches out to her, like she's giving Trudy something to hold on to, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. I was just really impressed.
I was just going to say, even if we had had more moments like this throughout this penultimate episode, it would have been quite interesting. These quiet, more held back, but they tell you everything you need to know about the relationship between these two people. What is at stake? How Trudy feels? Because, you know, yeah, like you say, she's stuck in this loop. It's the one storyline that they consistently give to her. And that must be very frustrating to play. I mean, Antonia does an amazing job every time she has to play it, but it must be quite boring after a while. And yeah, it's just a different take on it from the way Amber responds.
One of the things that really annoys me, though, is that they didn't show us more of Trudy and Hawk. Because all these mall rats are telling her, no, we can't go looking for your baby right now. We're doing what we can, but we can't, you know, kick up any noise about it. And you see her going to the back and Hawk putting his arms around her. And all I can think is, finally, there's someone she can lean on, and they don't explore it.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting visual cue that the mall rats... Now, I get it. They have to have a conversation. And they at least did show Trudy's being comforted in the background. But it did seem strange to me that the the people who are comforting her in this moment are the Gaians and not the Mallrats. You know, like she's led away by the Gaians who encircle her. You know, they cover her. They allow her to fall into their arms to take her away from this, to take her someplace where they can help her calm, you know, and show her, you know, the care that she needs in this moment. And I just thought it was very interesting that it's nobody in her tribe doing that for her in that moment, because they have to have a serious conversation. And I'm not knocking it for her. I just thought visually it just stuck with me.
Yeah.
That's all. It kind of reminded me of Midsommar, the movie where Dani finds comfort in this freaking cult who embrace her pain and share her pain with her, and is creepy and messed up as it is. How comforting that must have been for Dani to find people who will cry with her and scream with her, you know, because that's how she's feeling. And they're like, we won't let you feel it alone. And that visual of the Gaians just embracing, enveloping Trudy, when the very people who are supposed to be her family are just like, well, that's taken care of. We have to talk about serious stuff.
That's Comfort Mouse.
And I'm like, I wonder, I wish I had, again, why wasn't Trudy just left to be happy with the Gaians? Because it seems like that's where she found a genuine family of people who cared about her.
I mean, is this where we need to have the conversation where the same kind of thing happened with Dal, didn't it? He overstayed, he was enjoying time at the farm, and really he should have become a semi-regular, not a regular, and slowly transitioned him out of being on the show, basically, instead of killing him off for just so that Amber can get pregnant with young Damien, okay? Is this the point where we have to decide, Trudy, as much as we all love Antonia, as much as she does a great job, moving forward, she'll get less and less storyline. And the storyline they do give her in season 5, I think we all also universally hate. Is this the point where they should have just let her go off with the Gaians? Is this the natural conclusion of her story arc?
No.
Yeah, build up on what she's found.
So much happier there.
Build up on what she's found with Hawk. Like, you could have let her sail into the sunset with somebody who has, they're already showing the visual cues of how much he cares about her. And that he will cover her. He's got her back, you know? And it's like, you could have built on that. And at the end of the season, Trudy makes a decision. She's going back to the Gaians. She and Hawk are going to go, you know, and run the Gaians in Amber's stead, you know, because Amber's definitely never going back. You know what I mean? So I think I compared what we get. Yes, I would have preferred to say goodbye to her that way than to keep her on just so that she can be run over on the highway of the Jamber like bus. I don't know why. That's the only reason she's kept around is for that, you know?
And it's like, and especially Hawk. I mean, this guy was adamant about never setting foot in that city again. But for Trudy, he came with her.
As for Jay and Mega, I just wish we were given some semblance of understanding as to what it is Jay trusts so much about Mega. What is their personal history? Mm-hmm. Because, again, he it's not like he's the one who told Ebony, seek out Mega. He can be trusted. You know, she just sought him out on her own. And somehow just knew that that's the techno she should talk to. And it's like, where was he this whole time? And of course, they still haven't given Mega any history to explain where he's been, why he was late to coming to the city, you know, what his role has been this whole time, why he's so important all of a sudden in the Technos. They could have done something to show there's a personable relationship between Jay and Mega, because I don't trust Jay's judgment. I don't see any good reason to trust his judgment when it comes to who he's going to rely on and believe in. This guy was introduced to us coming to the city, totally fine with doing Ram's dirty work for some dream he has. Screw who gets hurt by that dream. I don't trust his judgment. So you got to give me a good reason to understand why he's willing to just be like, yeah, Meg is the guy we can trust. Why, though? Why is he the one you trust so much, Jay? Because I don't trust you. I don't think you're good at deciding the character of others. You immediately fell in love with Ebony. I think this says a lot about you, you know? yeah, that's my only real complaint about the scene. It's just like, I don't have any reason to understand why there's a deep-seated trust between the two of you and that you're willing to put everything on the line. Or are you just the kind of guy who will jump on any anchor?
Is it because this was actually originally intended to be vet?
Would have made more sense, because at least there'd be a history, you know, of emotional intimacy to trust his brother. If Ved was like, look, I know I've been on this wrong side, but I want to help you take Ram down. Let's do this. I've had enough or whatever. That also Ved would have a personal reason for why he'd want to. We don't know what Mega's game is, you know? And again, I'm cool with Mega just as he is fine, but I need a reason for why Jay is willing to put everything on the line to trust this guy we know nothing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just such a shame because they could have done so much more. That if we'd just gone a couple more scenes to explain Mega to us, it could have been so much better.
Yeah.
Because within such a group of nurse, you will have someone like that. Someone who knows everything, who knows whatever's going on, whatever strings to pull to get people to do what they actually want them to do. And people will seek that person out. But they should have shown us.
And the thing is, the whole way through, we have seen that the Technos aren't really a tribe. They're just a collection of people who share an interest, or they have a set of skills that are specialised. So they've all kind of come together. But there's no sort of flag they kind of sit under, other than not being introverts. So it makes sense that you would have people breaking away when it looks like the leader is incapable of leading. That makes sense. But like you say, Sabine, build it up a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, Mega, even if he's lying, just have him give his reasons for why he's totally on board with this coup. But he never even does that much. Not in a private conversation with Jay, not in a private conversation with Jabba. He doesn't explain to anybody why he'd be willing to betray Ram. And again, even if he's lying about those reasons, he never gives one. And yet people are so quick to be on board with seeking out his help to take down Ram. And it's like, what makes you think he'd want to?
Yeah, because what is this going to look like post Ram? That's the question no one is answering. Once you get rid of Ram, are they just gonna go? No! Is it gonna be easy under Mega because we already know him and he's helped us? Possibly.
You're thinking more than the writers. Because they hadn't even planned for what season 5 was gonna look like. They was like, we'll worry about his backstory and what he's actually gonna do in season 5. We won't even touch it here. So they didn't even have a plan.
But you kind of needed some of that now.
Of course.
And conversations about rebuilding. What's it going to look like after?
Yeah, even our heroes never question what happens next. Like, after we take down Ram, what does that mean for the city? You know, what is the... Because I'd forgive it the first time it happened, like, when they had to deal with the aftermath of the Chosen. They weren't prepared for the aftermath. They were just focused on the Chosen need to go. And then they were hit in the face with what that means. There's a power vacuum. Now what? You know? And so you'd think this time, especially Amber, would be considering what that power vacuum is going to be after they take down Ram. You know? And again, I just need some private conversations. It doesn't have to be big group discussion, but characters speaking to each other and expressing some of their concerns and their fears, you know, and referring back to the past. They've literally already lived through this. They've done this before and should be able to, you know, anticipate what could happen next because we're literally repeating the last storyline.
Yes. I think we needed that scene, maybe. Not that I would ever request scenes between Jay and Amber, but that is the conversation you kind of feel that they needed to have in a bit of privacy.
The whole I trust Jay completely thing.
Yeah, no, I hate that. Because, I mean, why would Mega help you selflessly without a reason? I mean, this is the sort of questions that Amber should be asking, really. Why is he doing this? What does he think he's going to get out of this? What sort of bargains have you made with him? And what do you think this is going to look like after?
I can't get over the fact that none of them question why no Mega one. Is trustworthy. You know, they just trust Jay's word on it. And it's like, why though? Again, I can forgive someone like Celine or even Pride for forgiving Jay. Why? Because they have spent this whole time in the city. And for them, Jay has proven that he is willing to work with them and protect them, save their lives, and is working in their interest. So I get it. He's won them over. It doesn't make sense to me that Amber is willing to go to war for Jay whenever he's questioned.
Mm-hmm.
When he's being questioned things that are incredibly valid. Again, we know that, you know, Lex has his own agenda, whatever the frick it is, but that doesn't change the things that he is bringing up that make sense. Mm-hmm. And Siva is treating Lex's behavior with much more nuance, you know, and it doesn't make sense to me that Amber would dismiss Lex completely out of turn. Even back in season one, when she couldn't stand him and saw him as nothing but a bully, when he made a good point, she was listening. You know, even though like Bray was the golden boy that most of the kids in the tribe liked, if Lex made a very good point about him, Amber would be like, that's a good point. You know what I mean? Bray hasn't earned that trust. And that's a question that needs to be answered. The girl he brought to our mall is sick and dying, and he comes back with nothing. She questions him. It's not like, oh, Lex, stop it. We have every reason to trust him because he hasn't done anything wrong. No, she had a healthy amount of skepticism, you know? And so it just doesn't make any sense to me that she's taking Jay completely at his word, has no doubts of her own. Even if she doesn't doubt Jay, why isn't she having any doubts about this Mega guy?
Like, the only one who I could forgive for not doubting Mega might be Siva, because she's the only one of them who might have actually known him.
Well, that's another missed opportunity, because we didn't get nothing from her point of view.
She could help. She could help back Jay's opinion of who Mega is.
Right.
Siva never acts like she's even met Mega. Like, she has no idea who the guy even is.
Go to 2 minutes. It's just her backing up Jay's word. Oh, yeah, Mega's trustworthy. Blah, 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 blah. We had some past history. That's it.
Yeah.
It was some simple as that, and I would have lent so much weight to what Jay is saying, but no.
But within the narrative, though, they have rode all the way back on Siva's involvement with the Technos. I mean, I think in this episode, they bring up her zapper, and that's the first time in ages that anyone's really talked about it.
Are we jumping to the... is that where we're going in this conversation? We're going to jump to them suddenly bringing up things that should have been a struggle the whole time. You're going to tell me that today is the day that Jay is going to say, absolutely, we could reverse engineer the zappers to work against the Technos. This is the first time you're bringing this up. This could have been something that Patch was working on the entire season.
Right.
Oh, no, he'll do it on the day. Don't worry. It'll be fine.
We'll do it live.
Well, and he makes one fair point. He can't do it without Mega.
That's great, but it's still something that could have been leaving breadcrumbs through the whole time that Patch has been messing with the zapper. Why?
Right.
Because he already had the idea about reverse engineering them to work against the Technos weapons. It's not like the Technos weapons just came into play. And then maybe Jay at the time could have been like, it's possible, but the kind of person we'd need, we'd need an inside man, and I don't know anybody we can trust, da 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 da. And now Mega shows up on the scene, and it's like, we've got our inside man, but it just shows up today. It's like the alarm in the grill suddenly making their grand reappearance after a great absence from the show, and nobody has anything to say about the fact that we finally have our doors closed and an alarm when people show up despite never using them the rest of the entire of the season. It's like, are you kidding me? You're showing us story points that could have been here the whole time. Lex, you don't get to bring up your wife now. You don't get to bring up your wife now as a point of a contention against the Technos when, one, you're sleeping with one of the Technos, and two, you gave up on her on episode 4.
All of that, yep.
It was. It's infuriating. It's infuriating. That what a rewrite could have done just to make this episode just better in its own. It couldn't fix the season, but just in this just a rewrite of this episode and these conversations could have been so much better. And instead, it's like, nope. Jay says we trust Mega. None of us have any questions except for Lex. But that's because he wants to keep going. And it's all that simple. And it's like, I shouldn't want Ram to win. I don't even like Ram, but I shouldn't want him to win because you guys suck so much.
Yeah.
Like, the city's not in better hands with you guys.
Well, we've actively seen that. We've actually seen that it is not in better hands.
Meanwhile, May seeks comfort from Pride, and he has to enlist Celine's help to get rid of her. Feeling downbeat, May resorts instead to dreams of him in paradise, until she's caught by an angry Celine.
That's where I feel at home, Celine, in my head. That's where I was before you came in with your high moral preaching. At home, with my memories. That's all I've got thanks to you.
Give me a break.
Mind you, when you've got memories like those, I was having a real good time. So was he.
Anybody I know?
Scans your thoughts. Did you know that? With this little baby, I can visit old friends in better times. I can visit anybody I ever knew. Any time I like. You can't stop me from remembering, Celine.
Curious, Celine tries to program herself. We live in memories of a time as a Mourette. These soon turn upsetting, however, and she destroys the headset. So yeah, panel, how do you react to May's attempt to get at Celine and Celine's experience in paradise?
So I just want to say that there is more chemistry between Celine and May in these two scenes that they're in than there was for the entirety of Celine and Pride together.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. This being their origin story for what happens later makes what happens later. Wow.
I hate that they're doubling down on May being the entire point of contention between Celine and Pride.
Yeah.
Doubling down on the idea that she's been the problem between those two, and Celine's got to keep an eye on her and rescue Pride from her unwanted advances, such as conversation. Oh my gosh, she can't handle a conversation because May might dig her claws into him because that's all she's about. And Celine swoops in. Celine is acting as though May is the one who sexually assaulted someone in her past. No, Celine, that would be you. So maybe it's just projection. But I don't like the way it just paints that the whole problem with Celine and Pride this whole time was freaking May.
Mm. Yeah, but it's the tribe. It always has to be the girl. It always has to be her fault.
I mean, am I the only one who thought that what May was talking about wasn't out of pocket?
No, it wasn't.
No, you're not. You're not the only one.
And she made a fair point.
She's expressing fear and vulnerability after realizing that the relationship she thought she'd come back to doesn't exist. And she's trying to cope with that. And she's looking for some warm words of comfort. Like, what's going to happen to me? You know what I mean? I'm barely stable. I don't have anyone. If there's a fight, all she wants is for Pride to be like, don't worry, we're going to take care of you. We're a family, May.
Yeah.
That's it. You're not on your own. And instead he acts like, oh my gosh, she's using her feminine wiles. And here comes Celine to the rescue. Like, what's going on here? You know, and Pride's like, oh, thank God you rescued me from having to be civil to a person I've done wrong in the past. Thank you for absolving me of any of my responsibilities as a human being and making me feel good about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I friggin' hated that so much. They acted like they behaved as though May was coming on to him.
Mm-hmm. This is a relationship that they are going to eulogize the hell out of.
Yep.
That was bad.
Yeah, badly done. And badly done. Bad writers.
And then Celine's flashbacks. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Like, after everything she's done and said about paradise being evil, she does decide to try it. And the things he goes back to are, okay, Brady's bird, Trudy almost dying, the girls. I mean, I'm at least glad that we got to see Chloe and Patsy there. But then it barely skips over Ryan's existence, and it goes straight to her throwing herself at Bray, which is what sets her off.
Mm. Oh, that was very interesting. It could have been
very poignant. Mm. My first problem with it is, why, if this thing, as we've been now told, it literally reads your thoughts and then projects them as a movie for you to watch. Okay, so let's just forget about that technology. That's what it does. Okay, mm-hmm. Why are you, so you're telling me that if you had the opportunity, your brain is only going to think about your post-apocalyptic life? That's the only thing you're going to bother trying to remember is this hellhole you've been existing in the last few years. You're not going to remember anything. You know, how about back when your parents were alive and you had security and safety and knew where your food was coming from and could take a shower, you know, and didn't have to worry about a toothache killing you. You don't have any of those memories. It's only life after the virus that you're going to bother remembering. Okay, fine. But Celine's memories could have played a very good point, because I know what they're going for. It's the idea that you can get trapped in the past, because what, you know, May is telling her, you can't stop me from having my freaking memories. Okay, you're going to be threatened by me having memories of pride. Like, you can't stop that. I can have those. Okay, which she's right. She has every right to those. And it could have been poignant that Celine finds the idea of living in the past upsetting. There's too many. It could even point out that she's got too much bad crap in her past that she doesn't want to relive. She didn't like who she was. They don't do anything with it, of course, but they could have, especially since they do end off with her trying to sexually assault Bray. It's not a moment she should be proud of.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to add, though, could those memories, like, I'm going to give maybe I'm thinking too deeply of this. I'm going to give the writer some credit. But maybe those memories were the specific ones that were chosen, because this goes on the back of what May said when she was basically saying, I've got nobody. This allows me to see people in the past. It allows me to spend time with these people. And all of the people, bar Trudy and Brady, that she sees are people that are gone, that she can't spend any time with. She can't spend any time with Bray or Ryan or the girls. They are all gone to her now, and they only exist in her memories. So is that what it was?
Yeah, but you just said they included Trudy and Brady, and they don't think to include, like, her father who walked out on her, or her mom, or any friends she went to school with, you know. Yeah, so, well. You know what I mean? It doesn't really hold up.
They don't have those and they're not recasting actors.
Okay, but out of all the things they could have shown with her memories with Ryan, why go for the one where she's puking?
See, that's the thing. None of the memories have a theme.
They don't.
Because if you take the Ryan one, you can say the theme is somebody who was there for her at her most vulnerable, who didn't make her feel like a freak, who made her feel safe and protected and supported.
Ryan saving her.
Right. But the problem is, none of these memories she's having have any kind of theme. They're a stream of consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that's fine. But again, they still don't really come together as to why these are the things she chose to remember. And it's like, what are you trying to say aside from she doesn't want to live in the past, I guess?
Yeah.
I guess that's it. It's that simple. There's nothing deeper there, you know?
And I guess, you know, if you're a new viewer as well, other than Chloe, everything, and obviously Trudy and Brady, everything that you're going to see, you're not going to know who Ryan is. You're not going to know who Patsy is. Yeah, you can sort of guess who they are, and we have seen her holding a picture on her wedding day when she married Ryan when she was in her office. But yeah, I mean, there's not much here. So for instance, if you look at the difference between when Lex went in to look at Tyson and remember their memories, a lot of that was establishing who she is for what was to come. So what is to come now? So that we got a visual cue, you know, for anyone who didn't see it, this is what Tyson looks like. So that when she turns up, we all know that's Tyson before she even says anything. And then, but like you say, yeah, not only is there not a theme, but also there are so many characters in her memories that, like, what are they even here for? If you were a new viewer, who are these people?
It was just for us. Literally, it was just for us. Oldies. Yeah. But it was just, look at what we used to be. Look at all the characters.
Oh, it makes you... And that is worse. Because that is reminding you. She was like, before you had that lobotomy. This is what you were like.
It's fundamentally what's wrong with Celine in this season, because there's no exploration as to what it is about her past she genuinely regrets and what has she learned from it. Mm. Like, she came back and claimed that what she learned is that she has to be strong. It's so generic, you know, but there has been no other exploration of what she has learned from the choices she made in her past and how they've affected her, aside from the generic message of I have to be strong. So you're saying that the things that went wrong in your past are because you weren't strong? You know what I mean? And so this out of context montage flashback for the audience who has been around since before season four has no real purpose.
Yeah, if they wanted to show us Celine not being strong, they should have shown a moment of Celine bowing down to the Chosen.
Yeah, like, have a theme. Have a, like, a semblance of, like, the things that she doesn't want to remember about herself. It would have her outburst at the end make more sense, and why the idea of living in the past is not appealing to her compared to someone like May, where the past is literally the only place she can get comfort. But, of course, even May's doesn't make entirely that much sense, because what she's remembering never existed. She and Pride never hung out at the beach and had this romantic moment, you know? So her memory, what she's... fantasy. Yeah, it's just her own fantasy. So it's like you're not living in your memories, because if you were really living in your memories of you and Pride, they'd probably be a lot uglier because of how he treated you, okay? And so even hers doesn't make that much sense. So far, the only one that has made sense was Lex's.
Yeah. But then if you look at May's memories of Pride, not her memories of Pride, her fantasy with Pride, that does lean into this idea that he's the only guy she's ever been with that treated her better than the others. And I mean, we know how he's treated her, but you can kind of understand why for her, this is a big relationship, because they've all been so terrible. So maybe that's what it is.
This could have been an opportunity to explore the tech and why it's so not just dangerous to live in your past, but the fact that the Paradise program allows you not only to recall the past, but to rewrite it as you would like to. Yeah. Because that's clearly what May is doing. She's rewriting the past with Pride as a loving relationship that was completely reciprocated. But it's like they cannot agree anywhere of how any of this works.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to care about it. And I don't. I'm sick of it. I'm sick to death of this.
I just also want to say, Lex selling them as DVDs, no offense, but the idea of watching somebody else's fantasy when I could have my own, I mean, I don't know. Would anyone buy that?
I just don't understand how anyone's willing to pay for his fantasies when the technos are giving out fantasies for free.
Yeah.
I don't understand why someone else's fantasies would be so appealing to you, you'd pay for them rather than getting your own fantasies for free.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there isn't a market for it, but I'm just saying, like, can we explore how this is supposed to work, how he's supposed to make a profit off of this?
Yeah. And it's not even like they link back into when he used to be Sheriff Lex, or when he used to be the gladiatorial champion. I mean, at least you could say, oh, it's a celebrity, their version of a Z-list celebrities fantasies. You could, but yeah, I mean, what is the US, what is the selling point here?
And how does buying someone else's fantasies work when apparently it's just been explained to us that the way the Paradise program works is it reads your mind. Dude, I'm done with that. I can't take it anymore.
No.
I want out of here. Someone take the helmet off. I can't do it anymore. I apologize for my constant breakdowns, guys. I'm hanging on by a thread.
So Trudy bursts into the hotel, demanding to see Ram, but is whisked away by a mysterious techno who turns out to be none other than Tysan. Overwhelmed, Trudy is quickly bundled out of the hotel with promises that Tysan will try to find Brady. However, when she returns to the mall, nobody believes that she has really seen their friend. So yeah, panel, let's start with that. How did you react to the return of Tysan?
I love Tysan. She's my favourite character. I was so glad to see her back. She looks great in her techno uniform. I love what they've done with her hair. No notes for makeup, 10 out of 10. scores across
looks
the board.
Amazing.
Yeah, she does. And it was so nice to see her back. Look, I understand the context, but I was so glad to see her. Welcome back, Queen. We have missed you. I'm glad you weren't in this season because it would have been hell. But thank God you're here now.
Yeah, I'm just thrilled to see her back. Obviously, I have my theories about that, but it's Seal looks like she belongs amongst them.
She looks great. She looks amazing.
She looks amazing, but she also like.
Well, we're going to get
she
into
puts on that mask. she puts on that mask, and it's like the guys there magically expect women or respect women with hair like that. Because they do seem to listen to her, and she seems to have a higher rank than them, which is not surprising for someone like Tysanne.
No.
I mean, this is the lady who worked her way up to be, well, the new Supreme Mother.
Yeah, but more than that, she also was the person who came up with the antidote that got rid of the virus.
Yeah. So, you know, she knows how to get on top. She doesn't do it Ebony's way. She does it her own way, which is, you know, far more devious and interesting.
I mean, okay. But, so I know that there's a lot of discourse around. So we're not going to get into your theory right yet, Sabine. But I did want to say there's a lot of discourse that I have read around about people saying Tysanne could not have been a techno. Why could she never have been recruited into the technos? If they value intelligence, the one thing we have seen with Tysanne, other than the space stuff that she's into, the crystals, the chakras, etc., is that she's not unintelligent. Two things can be true at once. You can be into alternative stuff and you can also be incredibly intelligent.
I mean, this lady knows alternative herbal medicine. Of course he's valuable to the technos, especially with Ram being constantly ill.
Yeah.
And medicine supplies running low.
It just doesn't make sense that they wouldn't have recruited her. And like you say, I mean, let's be honest, Tysanne is a survivor in a difficult position. She will do what she needs to do to survive.
And okay. She can Tysanne as a techno never made sense to me, honestly.
Okay.
Because if you, when you look at who Tysanne believes she is, her beliefs, her ideals, her just general sense of who she is and what she believes in, her transitioning into a techno never made sense. So I get what you're saying, but obviously her knowledge would be very useful to them, but Tysanne herself wouldn't just become a techno like that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we don't know how she became a techno. That's the thing. We don't know.
We do.
Well, I mean, do we?
Yeah.
It's inferred how she became a techno.
Okay.
But it wasn't from her own free will, which is what I'm getting at. Like, she wouldn't just become a techno.
No, but
completely eroding her identity.
As to why she was recruited.
I'll start with the positives on this scene. Before we get to the theories, you know, I just wanted to get my thoughts in. The positive. Okay. I like the way she's introduced from behind. I liked it because I recognized the character immediately from her saunter. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that I knew that's Tysanne's walk. You know what I mean? And even back in the day, that was one of my first thoughts was her body language. And I thought it was clever to try and hide her identity until she revealed her face. I thought that was cool. I agree with Lance. I have never bought Tysanne being a techno, especially by her own volition. That being said, I don't inherently hate the idea of her becoming a techno. I think of all the characters on the show, Tysanne has proven to be the most fluid as she grows as a person, as someone who had firm ideas of who she thought she was until experience basically smacked her in the face with a fish and forced her to reevaluate who she thought she was. And granted, I feel for them, it was more the cheap trick of, well, she joined the techno. I mean, they're chosen to help. Why wouldn't she join the technos? But I do think in some sense that Tysanne is one of the few characters I can buy because she's constantly changing and growing
yeah.
because of her experiences. And again, reevaluating herself. Who am I? Am I the person I thought I was? I thought I was this kind of person. And then I was proved wrong. I've let myself down. What does that actually say about me? And becoming more and more fluid, more bendy in her thought process, how she looks at other people and their choices compared to her own. So I don't hate the idea. I wish, at the time, I actually thought it was sort of promising because it's like, finally, we're going to explore what might have happened to some of the people who were taken.
Mm-hmm.
Some were used as experiments. Some may have been recruited, you know, even if it's just to save themselves. Some might have been seen as useful. In retrospect, I hate it because this is the most jingling of jingled keys anything they could have done to try to make us come back to season 5. Because think about it, you want to know what, you know, even if you're only here for the ships, if you don't give a crap about the plot, you're here for the love stories and the love triangles, you're coming back to see what's going to happen between Tysan, Lex, and Siva.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she also gives the promise that now that Ram's going to be defeated, where are the other mall rats that were taken? Are we going to see Jack? Yeah. Are we going to see Bray? You know what I mean? Yeah. So she's jingling those keys freaking hard, you know? And that's why I hate it in retrospect. Because I'm just like, this wasn't thought out. It's too late in the story to even introduce this idea of turning what are we calling these people again? Verts. Turning them and making them into technos. You know, because that was clearly not an idea in the past because they hate us so much. The idea of us being one of them was like off the table. So it's too late to say, oh, but maybe this is what they're, you know, and so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. It gave me hope for seeing other people again.
It gave us all hope, I think.
That's what they wanted. It worked. We were all like, ooh.
They didn't build up to it. They didn't earn it. But, oh, it caught your attention, didn't it? Rug pull.
It was like, oh, wow, Tysan. If we're going to get Tysan, are we going to get Bray? Are we going to get Alice? Which was basically all I could think.
I was just happy to have Tysan. I didn't really mind the others. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I was like, you know, especially since they've been dangling Bray in the end credits all season.
Mm.
I was like, okay, this could become interesting. And out of all of them to move over to the technos and find a way to maybe work against them from the inside, Tysan seems like a good choice.
But it's another example of a plot point that they left till the penultimate episode that could have been something that was, you know, in the background.
And then never became something.
Other characters even considering joining the technos. Again, you're already redoing the Chosen storyline. So why would you avoid that part of the Chosen storyline of people considering joining these people? If for no other reason, for power, influence, or to get access to the people who were taken. You know, and it's just too late in the game to bring this into the story.
Yeah.
Especially with Ram's whole obsession with Verts and that whole social structure. You can't just now go, okay, yeah, some people can recruit into the Tenos this easily. Like, it raises too many questions. It's too late to start this now.
Where did the Technos from? That's the thing. Like, where did all these Technos come from? Okay. Like, they haven't, as you guys have all said, they haven't explained to us how they all found each other, how Java and Siva joined.
So 51 is too late.
I know, that's what I'm trying to say. They haven't explained to us previous to this any of the mechanics of how becoming a techno works. Because we'll see later with Mega and his backstory, that means that he wasn't part of the technos then. He joined the technos as a vert. That's the thing. Because we don't know the mechanism of how you actually become a techno and who are the people who were the first technos, right? Are there first technos? What is it? What does it mean? Yeah, you're all spot on when you say this is left too late. We also don't understand the mechanism of becoming a techno because could they potentially all be verts? that came from different tribes that were taken over when they went to different cities, and then they just cherry-picked the ones that had the skills that they needed.
Probably.
We don't know. We'll never know.
I mean, it doesn't work when you have a whole season of technos getting into sexual and romantic relationships with verts, and the conversation of their lovers joining the technos doesn't come up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially it's always, it,
the only thing they ever talk about is, are you leaving the technos? But it's never, are you joining the technos?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's, I mean, you could have, okay, because we know that not every season can be as streamlined as season two. Okay. That's top tier, but they could be like season one, where you realize at certain points in the season, you've got a good storyline for the next leg. Okay. So when they introduced Mega, and we need a reason for why Jay and him know each other, trust each other, why Jay is willing to go all in on Mega. What if Mega is introduced as someone who worked with Jay when it came to vert integration? You know, yeah. Stuff like that. Then yeah. You've already laid the groundwork for Mega cherry picking Tysan himself. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. You could have laid the groundwork so that this doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so we learn, yes, there was a program of trying to get verts, because obviously they all started as verts, okay, except for Ram himself. They were all verts who joined him. He recruited these people. So it's like, yes, you got to find them from somewhere. And maybe that was Meg's interest, you know, like finding the useful people. And then it's like, okay, when we're introduced to Tysan, we understand that Mega is involved in that somehow, and it just, they could have laid the groundwork. They just didn't think any of this through.
No, it's beyond frustrating. It's beyond frustrating because, like, we're not professional writers, right? These are professional writers who've been writing for years and have been, and also have worked on this series for years at this point. And even they don't understand this. They don't intrinsically understand the story that they're trying to tell. And the thing is, like you have said, if this was any other show, that would be fine. But the tribe has always been trying to tell a story, and this is just an absolute failure.
And I was like, where did she come from? where has she been all this time?
When did she get
no, why did no she explanation. Yeah.
Did she come with Mega? Like, when did she show up? Why did she show up? Why are the other technos listening to her? You know?
Yeah, acting like she's been there all this time.
Why hasn't she tried to reach out to a single more rat? We know that they're not imprisoned in Ram's palace, so they can go outside. We see them outside all the time. It, like, Jay used to come and go all the time into the mall. It's bizarre that she's not reached out to anybody. But I just want to add another thing that really bothered me, just skipping ahead slightly. I just want to say, when Trudy told everybody that she'd seen Tysan, Pride made a comment like this. He said, well, none of us can believe what we've seen since Reality Space. Trudy's never once used Reality Space.
Yeah, speak for yourself, Pride.
Exactly.
It's that combined with, like, the person to come for Trudy when she come back is Ebony, which is interesting.
That was an odd choice.
Yeah. And then her telling Ebony this.
I loved it when Ebony went, yeah, it's me.
Like, and then, but like, she tells Ebony that she saw Tysan. And Ebony's like, yeah, no, can't be. Well, Ebony should know better.
I wish I understood the choice they were going for there. Like, the way they hone in on, you know, Ebony, like, it's very purposeful the way it's shot. Ebony's wandering the mall. She sees the mess in May's room and then notices Trudy at the grill, immediately lets her in. Now, I get where they're going from Trudy. Trudy is so broken and hysterical at this point. And she falls into the arms of the first person who's willing to offer her a hug. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I get Trudy. Like, and I do think it makes a statement of how off, how bad she is feeling that she would accept comfort from Ebony of all people.
From the person who lost her first time.
I'm not really sure what they're trying to do with Ebony offering the comfort to Trudy of all people. Like, I'm just not sure what the authorial intent was putting Ebony in that position to offer Trudy comfort, be the one who finds Trudy and takes her in her arms. And even though she doesn't believe she saw Tysan, you know, I don't think she's being rude about it. You know, she just, why would she even believe that Trudy had seen Tysan? Why would she have seen Tysan? She thinks Trudy's hysterical, you know, but I just don't
theory about that.
I don't know what it was, why the choice was Ebony of all people.
Yeah, and it doesn't lead to anything either. There's no payoff for this thing.
But I want to know what Lance's theory is.
I had a little theory about that. I think it's because they were beginning to plant the seeds for her already seeing hallucinations of Zoot.
Oh, really?
So when Trudy goes, I've seen Tysan, she's like, oh yeah, I'm seeing things as well. So I think they were just starting to plant those seeds now.
Because that's
I'll give that.
Yeah, okay. I buy that. All right, shall we discuss the theories? I don't think we can avoid it before we get to the last topic. So have at it, Sabine.
But this is so much less fun without Carlin. No, I'm still on the fence about Tysan. Like, season one, Tysan was suddenly there, conveniently rescuing Chloe, making her way into the mall. And then, you know, every time something's needed, Tysan automatically has the magical answer. Eagle Mountain, she finds the formula, all those things combined. And then the Guardian saying, end of season three, the true bringers of chaos are coming. And all I can think about is, are we sure Tysan wasn't involved in all that yet? That's like, had she been in on this? Like, we've been told in this season that they've tested those headsets on people and it was dangerous, could go wrong, people could go insane. Well, Jaffa definitely did. I mean, he thought he was seeing Zoot everywhere. Are we sure Tysan didn't help with that?
And everybody knows that I completely think this is a bogus theory. I think
I agree with you, Liz.
All of the character plot points that Tysan has been through, you cannot take what, two of them and attribute them to the Technos were here all along and this was always the plan and that Tysan's been running the long game from the moment we met her. Correlation is not causation. And I mean, it's not bad if you're going to rewrite the tribe as if it was always leading to the Technos, but you know how much you'd have to change to make that work. You know, like so much would have to change to make it work that this was all leading to the Technos. And we know they pulled the Technos right out of their butt, you know, there's just too much in the first three seasons that don't make any sense to try and claim that this was always leading to the Technos and Tysan was there to help him along the road. Because if she was a Techno spy, she was a terrible Techno spy. Like, she was absolutely horrible at whatever her job was meant to be, if you can even figure out what her job as a Techno spy was meant to be, you know? But that's just me. I can't see it. But I know what's out there. I know people love it.
I'm just going to add, given the quality of writing that we have seen from the midpoint of season three to the entirety of season four, okay? And we have talked lots of times about it basically being moment to moment, things are changed, storylines are changed. There is no clear plan. Get the idea. And I'm going to echo what Liz said here. The idea that she was a spy from the start puts way too much credit on the writers. Because as Liz said, that would then lead you to think that there was any sort of plan at all. We have watched season four and we know there was no plan for this. This was just a series of events that took place. Even to this last, you know, the second to last episode. And it's just a series of things happening with no clear structure, no clear reason. We've just spoken about Ebony and Trudy and the fact that we have that moment and it's meant to be impregnated with meaning. It never comes off. These are just, as you've all said, these are just jangled keys. These are things that they've chucked in a bag in the hope that series 5, they might still have some of these regulars. They might pick up that thread again if they don't forget about it. But the idea that there has ever been since season 2 any sort of planning is just, that's giving them far too much credit. And you have to believe that season 1, what season 1 was and what season 4 is, you have to believe that season 1, which is an almost perfect season of TV and a definitely almost perfect season of The Tribe, you have to believe that this was their end point then.
You're making some great points, but you're thinking about it as if it was a set plan rather than they were just revising the history of the show, which is what you always do. Mm-hmm. It was just something they decided to weave backwards instead of forwards.
Come on.
Every revision, it sucks.
Where is the evidence that the revision was there?
As we're talking about the dimension, the Technos is something, unfortunately, they do revise back into the show with the novels that they were there all along and all that other nonsense that we won't talk about now. But yeah, it's a lot of revisionist history that the show does, unfortunately.
Saying that, okay, fine, let's take that to one side. Where in any of that revisionist history, though, is Tysan involved in that other than when she was the Techno? That's the thing. Because we're not talking about the Technos, really, are we? We're talking about her having been a spy this entire time. I've never read anything other than that fan series that revises that. There's nothing in those books that says that that was a thing.
Well, that's the fan theory. The fan theory was why would she know? Books. Yeah. Why? That's how she knew about Eagle Mountain, because of the Technos.
But what I'm trying to say is, okay, fine. Let's put the Technos to one side and focus on this theory about Tysan.
We can't.
But in the book, they never make that claim. Whereas they, as you say, you are correct. They do make the claim about the Technos having been there from the start, but they never say anything about Tysan being a spy. This is just a fan theory. I don't even think that the writers have seeded this in.
Well, that's why it's a theory.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, If they had set this in, look, if the writers were better writers, then this theory, you know, if you did some stuff, you could definitely say, yeah, why not? Why not? Why not? It's fun. Let's have some fun. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember, we didn't have, like, when the show ended, we were given nothing. We had these 2 episodes with Tysan, so a lot of ideas were given to try and make sense of it all.
And you can totally understand, because there's a lot of, like, you could do a lot with this. You could close your eyes and fantasize about all this stuff, because they're never going to give you anything. That's the sad thing about Tysan being a Techno. You get nothing. Yeah.
That was in a gap before the books.
Yeah, massive gap
thing that kills the Tysan as a spy theory dead for me, just in general, and just in this season alone, is what is the job of a spy, right? Now, think back to the chosen spies. What was their job? Even Trudy's role as a chosen spy. What's the job? Their job was to help steer toward what the chosen's ultimate goal was, to mislead people, lie to them, give them false information. Also, they would end up exactly where the chosen wanted them to be. So in the way that, you know, Ellie is fed information by what's his face that the chosen have been finished, or, you know, Trudy claiming that, you know, she escaped them, and that, you know, telling the mall rats and the city kids specific information so that the chosen could have their takeover. That's the job of a spy, right? So if Tysan's supposed to be a spy for the Technos, what is her role in their ultimate goal? One, we know the Technos really don't have an ultimate goal that they all are aware of. And two, why would they know nothing about this city if they had a spy living among the mall rats for 3 years? They wouldn't have to have found out stuff about the mall rats and who they were and what their relationships were to each other, because their spy, when they picked her up during the beginning of their invasion, would have been able to fill them in on everything they could possibly know about the mall rats, because she'd been doing deep cover like a Russian sleeper agent since season one. And yet they don't know anything about the mall rats or this city, what anyone's ties are. They're constantly being surprised and bum rushed by who they're dealing with, because Tysan was obviously a terrible spy, or she wasn't a spy at all.
All right, cool. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. Tysan visits a prisoner camp and locates Brady, who's taken back to the mall by Mega, securing the trust of the Morats ahead of their big attack. As the episode ends, however, we see Mega reporting his success to Ram, who is pleased that he now has the last pocket of resistance against him exactly where he wants them. So, panel, how do you react to this final revelation?
I found it adorable to see Mega bringing Brady back.
I thought you might like that.
It's just, you know, like, it was very odd to me that, like, Tysan spotted her because Brady was suddenly shouting Mama. And all I could think was, aw, these are one of the few words this kid gets to say in his whole show. And it's to Tysan? That's odd.
Yeah, but come on, I mean, Brady has grown up with all these people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a fine family, aren't they?
She was her extra supreme mother, I guess. But
yeah, but even before then, I mean, there are multiple times where she holds her in season one, aren't there? So
you could just argue that the reason she says Mama is because she sees one of her mother's friends. And it's like, yeah, if anyone can get me to my mother, yo, you, I know your face. Where's my mom?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're all like her aunties and uncles, aren't they, really?
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, just you know, they see Mega, and half of the tribe starts shouting, oh no, there's a techno here. Except for the one person who says, no, open the grill.
Because they don't know who he is. That's the problem.
Yeah, but who says open the grill? Was it Ebony?
It's May.
Ah,
May.
Interesting as well. But I don't know, it's just, for me, I just find it cute to see him walking in with Brady. You know, her willingness to just walk in there with him instead of whining, screaming her head off or whatever. Because to her, he's a stranger. And just, you know, Trudy's happiness at seeing her daughter again makes up for a lot for me. So I get he wins the mall rats over with this. The whole scene after that, though, with Ram, it's, I don't know, something feels off. Like, Ram is so, yeah, but Ram is so smiley about, okay, we've taken away their last piece of resistance with this. And Mega has such an interesting expression on his face. But that's because he probably already knows what's going to come next.
Like that as a cliffhanger. Like, if you were invested in this story, which I am not, but I can recognize when something is pretty decent in its storytelling. I like the reveal. Or anyone who didn't know where this was going, that Mega is double-crossing the mall rats. All this hoopla, the Jay is like, he can be trusted, and he's got everybody on board to trust him, and he does this act that wins the mall rats over by getting Brady, and so it's like, okay, now think about it, you're a new audience member, you don't know where this story is going, and you actually care, and then you get this reveal that, you know, after he brings Brady back, the Mallrats are all far more calmer and confident about going forward with this plan. One that they have already expressed is dangerous. And, you know, who knows how it could end if they put their trust in Mega's hands. He's won them over. And then the next scene, the audience is revealed to them that he's likely double-crossing them because Ram knows everything that Mega's doing, supposedly, okay? And I thought that is actually not bad, because it gets the audience their trepidation, it sends their anxiety spiking through the roof. They've got to come back for the finale because now they know the Mallrats are likely walking into a trap, trusting someone who's working with Ram this whole time. And then retrospectively, I love that it just reveals that Mega was literally playing everybody. Like every single person he's talking to, he's playing a different game. Like he's playing chess. They're all playing checkers. I like that reveal about his character. Everybody knows just as much information as he wants them to because he's got his own agenda. And I thought that was pretty cool. Like, okay, if you want someone to come back for the finale, that's the way to do it. Because now we know our heroes are going into what's likely going to be an ambush. Ram is expecting them.
And yeah. It does kind of make sense that he was working with Ram on this because it's the easiest way for him to get away with taking a prisoner out of the prison camp, you know? That's like, there would be questions if he just does that.
I also think it's really interesting that Ram specifically says he doesn't want Java to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't watch the previous episode, so I wasn't in that, so I don't know what's happened since then. But I think that's interesting.
I like it because, again, in retrospect, Mega agrees, oh, yeah, she don't need to know. And, of course, in the finale, you find out, or maybe it's season five, first episode, but you find out that Java knew all along because Mega has also been letting her know her side of the plan, you know, and I thought that was cute. I also like that you get that reveal in the next episode that Mega is working with Tysan, and so he's likely the one who sent her to go looking for Brady. Like, she probably brought that information to him thinking he was on the side. I don't know, you know what I mean? It's all convoluted, but you know, there's just something kind of cool about Mega having all these plates in the air and playing every single person. It takes a lot to be able to convince a bunch of people with diverging interests that you're in their corner.
He's just like the ultimate puppet master.
Yeah, he's actually quite good at it.
I also like how Trudy doesn't even bother to argue with the others when she's like, I saw Tysan. And they're just like, you know, you can't believe what you did. And she's like, I know what I saw, and I'm not going to argue with you people. Yeah, I don't know. There was, maybe that's Antonia. It was just a resignation, and it was just like, nah, I'm not even going to bother with you guys. I know what I saw. Now let me get my daughter to bed.
Yeah, it's like, okay, don't believe me. That's fine. I have my kid back. You know, good luck.
They could have capped it off with a great scene between her and Hawk talking about going back to the Guyans.
That
made me happy.
That would have been the natural thing that would have happened next, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like, I got to get my kid out of here. Be like, Trudy, just come home with me, you know?
Yeah.
It must be exhausting being constantly seen as hysterical and emotional by everybody else in your close circle. So it's like...
Yeah,
I'm sure she was just done with them all.
Yeah. And why would you want to stay in that environment if you had something better to go to? It's like a toxic workplace.
Yep.
Her and Hawk had a conversation where he's like, look, you know, tomorrow we're going to, however this ends, we're going to get the rest of our people out of captivity and we can just go home. You know, you don't need any of this, Trudy. And she, you know, and you could just hint that the reason he wants her to come is because, don't you think I'd take care of you? And she'd be like, well, why would you take care of me, Hawk? Don't you know? Oh my gosh, I can see it in my head. You know what I
mean?
And she'd be like, oh wow, I didn't realize. And he's like, oh yeah, I've been, you know, I've been creeping for a while, girl. Come home with me, please. Yeah, that would have been a great place to leave Trudy.
And before that, we do get some nice, I mean, we do get some nice moments at the end of this episode, don't we? Because there's that moment between Amber and Ebony, which, I mean, I just really want them to properly fight each other.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was that moment between Ebony and Jay when they were in bed and he was like, well, why don't you use the headset? He's so dismissive of her now. It's absolutely disgusting.
She's trying to have pillow talk with her man. And he's just like, why don't you just go do it? She's like, oh, no, I prefer real life. He's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's so gross. Oh, God.
Like, what a jerk. I do think the scene between Ebony and Amber is interesting. Now, okay, one, I don't like the whole Amber's responsible for her relationship, good or ill. Yeah. Like, give me a break. If you got worries, look at your man. All right. It's not Amber. But I do like it in the idea that Amber was flirting with Jay just because she knew it pissed off Ebony. And she's just having fun with the idea of it. But I like the image of this is the moment that Amber realizes, maybe that's not the crazy I want to dip in. Like, it was fun to make her jealous and to see how uncomfortable she is when I'm making eyes at her man. But is it really worth my life? Like, do I really want to take it further than I've taken it? Because in the next episode, she'll be like, look, I'm going to play it straight with you. You know, I'm playing games, but I'm not actually interested in your boo thing. I'm waiting for Bray. And I just want to make sure you know that, because Amber realized her life was on the line, because if Jay dies in this, Ebony is going to kill her. And you can see that on Amber's face, kind of like, okay. It was fun, but it's not worth dying for, you know?
you know what Ebony's comment reminded me of Trudy's, come anywhere near Bray or Brady and I'll scratch your eyes out.
Yeah, basically.
Celine was like, I want all the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But they were some really interesting scenes, especially there were a couple of times after they picked, you know, after Brady's returned and everybody kind of leaves and you've got that shot and Amber and Ebony are like looking at each other. I like this. This was, yeah.
But instead, we're going to have a whole season of Amber gaslighting everybody that she's not actually interested in Jay.
Yeah. And let's be honest. I mean, Amber and Ebony, they're probably the longest relationships either of them ever had with each other. I've never seen this.
The whenever one constant look, in their life.
Yeah. Wherever you look, I'll be there. Whenever you turn around, I'll be there. When you think you're happy, I'll be there. You are they are literally never alone because one of them's always staring at the other.
I don't know why they won't let Dee and Patch kiss. Did anyone else think that was strange?
I thought that was weird.
You know, just like a little gentle peck on they don't have to suck each other's tonsils out or anything. It's just strange that they haven't consummated their little, you know, newfound love with a little kiss.
I mean, even Ned and Alice kissed, for God's sake.
They did way more than that.
They kissed on camera, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought it was odd. I thought it was an odd choice to have them, you know, it's a nice scene, them near the grill talking, sharing these vulnerable things, and Dee wanting just a little reassurance that I'm the one who, yeah, I just want to be with you, girl. And it's like, okay, so this is the perfect moment where he'd lean in and give her a little reassuring kiss. And instead they walk away and he hesitantly puts his arm around her shoulder. And I'm just like, why don't they get a kiss? I don't get it. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of reasons. I just visually, it was like you were building up to a kiss and then it turned into platonic land. And I thought that was odd.
Yeah, it was odd.
It felt like they were back to when they haven't confessed their feelings to each other yet. Like that's what the scene looked like. This is a scene that should have happened before he confessed, I'm in love with you. And he, you know, it's like they're still dancing around each other and realizing this person genuinely cares about me. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And then they walk off and he hesitantly puts an arm around her shoulder. It seems an odd visual language for two people who have confessed their feelings for each other. Same thing when she read the letter. She didn't kiss him. She hugs him. And I'm like, are you deliberately keeping these two from kissing? And I'm wondering why. Was it the actor's choices? I'm just curious. I mean, it could have been the actors, you know? We're like, oh no, I'm not having my first kiss on screen. Are you crazy? Which I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. If I was a teenager, I don't want my first kiss to be on camera. Okay. I haven't kissed someone in real life. I don't want to do it on camera. And, you know, like that happens to a lot of young actors who admit.
Well,
my first time I was even anywhere near simulating intimacy was on camera. And that's weird because I've never done it in real life. So, you know, I'd buy that if the actors were like, no, you don't want that to be my first time.
It's a shame because, yeah, we'll get to it in the next episode, but that's like the final moment we see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're in the fight, though, right? And then it's like after the fight they disappear.
They don't even have to fight, I believe.
I could have sworn they're in the fight. They're in the fight, and then we don't see them for the rest of the episode after like Rams have been captured and all that stuff. And it's like the beginning of season one, we find out the letter they left, and they just disappeared.
Okay.
I just don't remember. We'll see next time.
I remember it specifically because I'll never get the image of Patch charging in with like a bat or something as they all get shot down in Ram's vision.
It lives
registered in my head. Like, great ambush tactics, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that brings Series 4, Episode 51 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel and your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for the finale! Until then, bye!
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 Bye!